This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a bettor. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. And Michael, we are down to the final day of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Eight more games here in the second round. How we doing, man?
We're good. I mean, what a tournament, right? I mean, don't you just love it? Can you imagine Thurston Howell's team, the Yale Bulldogs, beat, they beat Charles Barkley's Auburn Tigers. I mean, this is what we love about it, right? We love the fact that, we see Oakland beat Kentucky. How? I don't know. I mean, they couldn't duplicate the magic the next night against North Carolina State, even though, when someone's shooting like they were shooting against Kentucky, it's hard to think you're going to duplicate it again. But it's what we love the tournament. It's really never about who's the best team. It's who plays the best that day. And that's what's so appealing. And that game last night between Creighton and Oregon, wow. You know, that were two battles going on, and I think both teams deserved to win. Unfortunately, only one could.
Yeah, that Creighton and Oregon game, unfortunately, I was on the wrong side of that one. I love the Ducks. I love backing Dana Altman in the month of March. His teams are always ascending at the end of the season, which is what I love about him. Like, this, what you see in March is different than what you saw in November and December. And I thought Oregon, I had Oregon with the spread. I had some Oregon money line. And they were able to survive the first overtime, but it ultimately ran out of gas in OT number two, losing the game 86-73. So Creighton goes ahead and covers a 3.5-point favorite. Game goes over the total of 148.5 as the Blue Jays are heading to the Sweet 16. Oregon goes home. But it was a heck of an effort, though. But it was only like, it felt like it was a two-man game for Oregon with Cousinard and Dante. They really didn't get much from the other guys. And unfortunately, they just didn't have enough left in the tank to go ahead and match the Blue Jays in double OT.
Yeah, and I think the other thing we noticed when you watch the games, I mean, like Arizona and Dayton was a close game. Dayton makes runs. But I think it's the ability of some of these teams to withstand the runs, right? I mean, the Kansas-Gonzaga game's close for a while, and then Gonzaga was able to run away. I mean, Michigan State, has got a 10-point lead against North Carolina, and Herbert Davis is going crazy over there on the sidelines, telling the team to get more physical. And the next thing you know, they put it in another gear and put that game away. So, I just love watching it. I love the reactions. I mean, Iowa State, Washington State was a great game, too. You enjoy watching all these games because it's kind of like one or two plays here. I mean, that Tennessee-Texas game was closer than I thought it was ever going to be, Femi.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that was one where I'm watching it. I'm like, don't do it again, Rick Barnes. I'm sure everybody was ready to pounce on Rick Barnes if Tennessee lost that game. But he pulled it out 62-58. Volunteers beat Rick Barnes' old team, the Texas Longhorns, in that matchup. But, yeah, I was getting a little nervous for him for a second there because Texas was hanging around, and it felt like Tennessee just couldn't quite shake them. But they ultimately got the win 62-58. Their game goes under the total, though, and Texas does get the money at the window covering that 7-point spread in yesterday's game. But we'll get to all of the games and recap them.
How's your bracket doing?
The bracket's solid. We still have all four Final Four teams, which I think is like the that's like the main thing when you look at some of the brackets, because I know like we get so caught up with the first weekend of, oh, I lost this game, I lost this game. As long as you don't lose your Final Four teams, you're pretty solid right now. So we still have all four. I have Arizona winning the national title. Oh, you said you lost.
Go ahead.
Team?
I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was gonna say I have Arizona winning.
Kentucky. Lost Kentucky. I was like, I just felt that they were primed and ready to go. But I think what has been reinforced to me over the last couple of days, I listened to Jay Wright. I've listened to a lot of these coaches talk, and the age disparity between these one and done teams and these older teams is significant, right? And I think it makes a difference in how you play the game. And I think Jay Wright said it well. And they were kidding. Some of the kids on the team.
Yeah,
the Oakland kid. They were kidding him about being a State Farm agent, and they're singing the song to him. But the reality of it is he might be that. But on that day, he was a better player in terms of college hoops than he was in pros. And so, you know, I mean, to me, that I lost Kentucky on that one. I was a mistake to put him in there. Had I known the maturity level, which I should have. But look, yesterday was a great day for the bettors too, Femi. I mean, all the favorites won. What, the 6-2 is a close. So I don't know if it'll play over into today. We'll see.
The bettors are plush with money in their pockets after yesterday's action there. Like you mentioned, all eight favorites won outright. So the money line parlays that people put together with the favorites, those all got home 6-2 against the spread. We'll see what today has to bring to us. There's a couple dogs that I think are interesting. One that I'm for sure going to bet, and one that could be a little bit frisky in that Lone Star State matchup. But we'll get into all of those games with the three guests that we have coming up. We have three great guests joining us on the show. 30 minutes from now, our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, will be joining us here to break down his plays on today's slate. Also, what he thought of yesterday's games. And then in the second hour, 11:15 Eastern, 8:15 Pacific, Chris, the Bear Felica of the Bear Bets podcast, also a Big Noon Kickoff on Fox Sports. He'll join us to give us his thoughts on the tournament. And then JVT, our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, also the co-host of VSiN Primetime, will check in with us at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific. So it'll be a lot of hoops. We'll talk some NFL as well. The big trade between the Chiefs and the Titans a couple nights ago. We'll discuss that, get Michael's thoughts on that one in the next segment. But with the hoops that we've seen here so far, I sit back and I watch it because I mentioned I have Arizona to win the national title in my bracket. I still am not sure about that pick, having watched them play these couple games against Long Beach State and yesterday against Dayton, because I think Arizona's ceiling, their high end, is really, really good. Like, it's up there with the UConns of the world, the Houstons of the world, but sometimes they make some mistakes, Michael. Like, they'll go through 5-minute stretches of just brain farts and turnovers and just fouls, and you really wonder. It's like, man, this team is really living on an edge, but they were able to get past Dayton yesterday, 78-68. Talk about living on the edge of the spread there. There was a point where Dayton had a chance to go ahead and backdoor at the end of the game. They missed the bucket, and they opt not to foul, and they ultimately get the money for the Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dayton had their spurts in the game. I mean, look, what Dayton was able to accomplish, you know, to get there, to overcome the deficit that they did in their first game, I mean, that was fairly impressive. But I think the most impressive thing of all is been UConn. I mean, I know they, you know, look, UConn was supposed to win the first game. I'm not saying that. You know, when you play Stetson, obviously you think you're going to win. But the way they won, the domination, the seriousness that they took within the game, to me, was something that was really impressive. And so, I just think, to me, they're hardened. You know, they're one of those trees that can withstand the wind. And I think clearly they're going to be a tough, tough out. And I know today, you know, as they get ready to play Northwestern went to overtime to win that game. But I think, to me, that this is a team on a different level with a different flow to their game, which I think is what we've learned and what we've been able to see in this college hoops. There are certain games where you watch teams that have this ability to get into that flow, like North Carolina did against Michigan State yesterday. And when they get to that flow, it's really kind of impressive to watch. And I think that's what we love the David and Goliath, and we root for David. But what we're really rooting for is the flow of the game, is how they are able to take their game to another level beyond. And, you know, and it's impressive. And I think UConn has been that. And with that dominating win against Stetson, I think, to me, Northwestern's in for a handful today as they get ready to play this. And the other thing we can't dismiss either is the fact that the Southeast Conference, you know, which I thought was going to have a better outing, was not very impressive.
It's been bad. It's been bad for the SEC, and there's no way around it, what's been happening there. It's funny that this comes on the heels of Greg Sankey's comments about trying to say, let's get more Power 5 teams in there, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC. And maybe it's the karmic force or the karmic nature of the basketball gods giving the SEC the business here in this NCAA tournament. But they've been dropping off like flies. Kentucky, we saw Auburn lose to Yale in that game on Thursday. It's just been a poor showing for the SEC so far here. But who knows, maybe Texas A&M can right the wrong, but Texas A&M, they'll have their hands full against a Houston team that, Mike, I don't know if you saw Friday night, Houston, when they were playing Longwood. I mean, defensively, the first 5 minutes of the game, they smothered that team. Like, Longwood, I think, had one attempt and four turnovers. Like, they couldn't even get shots off as well as Houston was playing on defense. And that's Houston's calling card with Kelvin Sampson. They've always been a really good team, a high floor, just because they're going to defend really well and they're going to get to Sweet 16s more often than not. But Today might be a little bit tricky against your buddy Buzz Williams, though, because Buzz has got some guards that can really hoop it up. Wade Taylor, chief among them. If Wade Taylor can get hot, maybe Houston could be on upset alert right now as a 9.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I mean, they dominated Nebraska, right? And I think their guard play was great. And typically, you know, when you watch Texas A&M all through the season, as I have, because I'm a huge Buzz fan, is that, you know, they're scoring. They've had a hard time. They've played great defense through the year. They just couldn't score very much. And now their guard play has increased, which is what everybody expected them. I think they were probably weren't the same team. And he mentioned it in his interview when he said how difficult the season was trying to get it straightened out, partly because of their inability to put the ball in the basket, the simple things. And now they kind of have gotten there. And with Wade Manuel doing what he's been able to do, and if their defense can play to a level to match Houston's defense, I think it's going to be a fun game tonight.
Yeah, no, he's a legit guard. If you have not watched him, Wade Taylor IV is as good as they get in the backcourt. And he's one of those guys that can heat up. And when he gets heating up, it can get real scary for the opposition there. Houston right now, a 9.5-point favorite. There's even some 10s in some spots if you want to go ahead and back the Aggies, or if you want to lay it, there's a 9 out there in favor of the Houston Cougars. So as always, shop around our VSiN pro tip that is ever so green. You mentioned Connecticut. They're the big Goliath here in this tournament, laying 14 against a Power 6 conference. That's a really big number there. But you watch them play. Do you really want to step in front of the Huskies? I'm not really pushing over people to go ahead and back Northwestern.
No, they've got that flow to them, which is different. You know, you get the flow, it's motivation, but then it becomes another gear. And that's a hard team to stop. When you have that, it's hard.
Yep. The defending national champions look every bit as good as the number one overall seeding that they have entering this NCAA tournament. All right, we'll talk some more hoops in 15 minutes, but coming up next, L'Jarius Sneed now with Tennessee Titans. We'll break it down here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network on this Sunday, March 24th. The second round of the NCAA tournament will conclude later on today, and then we'll be down to 16. Coming up in 15 minutes, our buddy Tim Murray of VSiN Primetime will be joining us to give us his best bets and thoughts on these second round games. He's got to play in the game between James Madison and Duke. The market has been lighting up on that one so far here this morning. We're now down to 7 pretty much across the board there. So the Dukes of James Madison getting bet against the Blue Devils of Duke. How about the Duke versus the Dukes? We'll go ahead and have that game a little bit later on this afternoon. But Mike, let's turn our attention to the gridiron right now here. And we saw the trade that we felt was imminent between L'Jarius Sneed here. And we thought that maybe he could go to the Indianapolis Colts. There was some interest there from the Colts, at least on the outside. That's what it seemed like. But instead, he's going to an AFC South rival, the Tennessee Titans. Kansas City will go ahead and have a third round pick and a swap of 2024 seventh round picks for L'Jarius Sneed as he goes to Tennessee. Then he agreed with the Titans on a 4-year, $76 million deal, $55 million guaranteed. In terms of the compensation for Kansas City, I felt that this, I don't know if it was light, but L'Jarius Sneed was their number one corner. I thought that they can get maybe a little bit more here. What did you think of this trade here and what it means for the Tennessee Titans now going forward, getting Sneed in that secondary?
From Kansas City side, you got to wonder why they tagged him, right? They took themselves out of, because of the tag, they took themselves out of free agency. They were tied up with his money. They couldn't do anything. Had they not tagged him, they would have ended, the results would have fairly been the same. They would have got a compensatory pick next year at the bottom of the third round. Because Kansas City's not going to sign anybody. They're going to sign their own players. Now they've got this extra cap room that they've already redone Mahomes' deal and some other players' deal to fit this huge cap number in. And now they have this extra cap room, and there's really no players out there for them to sign. So they can go ahead and sign a lot of guys on one-year deals or, you know, do that. But to me, it seemed like the end result was exactly where they could have gotten had they not tagged them.
Yeah.
You know, had they not tagged him, they could have gotten right here. And so I don't know if it was a sense of desperation by the Chiefs to just say, okay, we got to get out of this or not. But to me, there's no benefit in what they've accomplished other than they kept cap room tied up on their cap and they get the direct pick from the Titans. Now, for the Titans side, look, You know, they were the last team in the league in interceptions last year. They could not play pass defense whatsoever. They signed Sean Murphy Bunting, and he didn't work out. Now he's back. Now he's off again. And so they struggled to make any plays on the football, and they get a guy who's a good man-to-man player who can intercept passes. He's also a very good tackler. Got his hands on 14 passes last year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're in a lot of man-to-man coverages, it's hard to get your hands on ball because your back's to the receiver, the quarterback, most of the time. So it really enhances their secondary and allows their defensive front, if they can get that going, if they add other defensive linemen to go with the great Jeffrey Simmons, it certainly is going to help them. And we've got to see the contract in terms of what the outlay was. But for essentially a fourth-round pick the following year, which is what they gave up, a fourth round this year is a third next year, it seems like a good deal for Tennessee to improve an area of great weakness.
So the Titans this offseason, they've been pretty active here. They went ahead and signed Calvin Ridley. They signed Tony Pollard. Now they will go ahead and make that trade for Legarius Sneed. Like they've been making some moves here to try to bolster up this roster. Their win total over at DraftKings is sitting at 5.5. We'll talk more win totals a little bit later in hour number two. But have you liked how the Titans have approached this offseason? Because as an outsider, sometimes I get a little bit confused. I'm like, okay, where are they at in their timeline? They're going out and making some of these moves here because they have the cap space to do it. But is this making them better later on in the fall, and is it going to make them better down the road here in a couple of years?
Well, the key question is their offensive line going to improve? And I think what they've done so far is set themselves up to pick an offensive lineman. They're going to have to do that. They picked Skoronski last year in the first round. But look, they still have issues at the tackle position that they have to handle up front. They've changed the dynamic of their team, Femi, right? They've gone from a power run team to a spread team with Pollard and Spears now. And they're doing everything in their power to make Will Levis look like he can operate in a spread formation. We shall see. But to me, you know, they needed to have a corner so badly, right? And they signed Chidobu Awosu from the Bengals, who was a really good player until he hurt his knee 2 years ago. And we'll see if he can come back. So they really improved in that area. If he's healthy with Sneed, with McCrary as their slot, they've improved, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think they're making steps. But all this is going to come down to, as you and I both know, it's going to come down to, is Will Levis good enough? Can he make the plays he needs to make? But remember this about Tennessee. If you go through and study their drafts over the last 4 years before Rand Carthon got there, they had missed on so many high picks. And it wasn't, and the rewards they were getting for when they traded A.J. Brown and they bring in Treveyon Burks, I mean, they really haven't gotten that. So they needed to supplement their talent level. And I think this is what they've done in free agency and maintain still cap room, because obviously they're not paying a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Will Levis right now on that rookie contract entering year two of his career. The Titans over at DraftKings, 11-1 to win the AFC South. The favorite, the Houston Texans, +135. Jacksonville, +210. Indianapolis, +280. So Tennessee, from the betting market standpoint, seen as a distant fourth team in that division. And it'll be an uphill climb for Brian Callahan, the first-year head coach coming over from Cincinnati. He's brought a lot of some of those Cincinnati guys with him now to Tennessee, and Rand Carthon, the general manager. But it's going to be interesting to see just what they get from Will Levis and if they're able to fix that offensive line, because like you said, that's the ultimate thing that's going to dictate if this team is better than what we think or if they're what the market thinks with a 5.5 win total and 11-1 to ultimately win their division. How about the Miami Dolphins? Apparently there's some, quote, strong mutual interest between the Miami Dolphins and free agent wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. Beckham and the Dolphins met this past week, and apparently both sides seemed to like each other. They even talked some numbers, but there was no deal that was made. This to me feels like we're making too big of a deal of a guy that's no longer a big deal on the field. But OBJ, whenever he's discussed, he's going to bring some headlines up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's remarkable how we remember when with OBJ, and now he's going to go to a team where he's the third option. How's that going to work out? Look, I mean, it's name appeal, and that's what we get distracted with in free agency. Look, this Miami team has taken a lot of hits, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen them. They've lost a really good defensive lineman in Christian Wilkins. You know, they've lost some speed at linebacker. They signed Jordan Brooks to come back, but they're treading up water, and they haven't really improved their offensive line. I mean, I know they lost Robert Hunt, but they've signed, you know, they signed Isaiah Wynn back. They still have Robert Jones. They signed Aaron Brewer from Tennessee to be their starting center. And Tennessee saw that as a weakness in their on their team. So that's a fast. That's always interesting how that works out. Shaq Barrett's going to have to come in, and Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips are going to have to stay healthy. But I think they're treading water. And I think if they put any money, substantial money, into a Beckham contract, I won't understand that one, because it's not, that's not the reason why they're not getting to where they need to go. The reason why they're not going to get to where they need to go is simply the fact that they got to improve that defense, which was slipping. And then you got the Vic Fangio factor, right? You know, they hire Anthony Weaver, who's 1 year coordinator, defensive line coach by specialty. Joe Barry's with them. I think they're going to miss a lot. Now they say, well, Vic didn't get along with the player. Well, Vic was probably more demanding. And I think when you're in Miami, you know, you got to have attention to detail, right? You got to have that ability to have that competitive gene within you to block out distractions. And I think when you add a guy like Beckham, all you're doing is adding more distractions. The results on the field aren't going to benefit what you get off.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of stuff to do down there in Miami. I've never been, but I've heard it's a fun time. And the players seem to love that city as well.
Lots to do, Femi. A lot to do.
I don't think
they've closed the gap on Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo's a week. They're weakened too. Like, I think this AFC East hasn't really declared. I mean, the Jets are talking about signing Jadeveon Clowney to a one-year deal. They're specializing in one-year deal. They've got $30 million tied up in one-year deals. And again, we're going to call, you know, the Jets are the team that we call if, because if they stay healthy, they look good. On paper, they look good. You know, Tyron Smith, good at left tackle. That looks good on paper, right? You know, Mike Williams, great receiver. Love him. Does he stay healthy? That looks good on paper. You know, they're the paper Tigers right now. Aaron Rodgers looks good on paper. But are they good enough? Morgan Moses looks good on paper. Is he good enough? I mean, to me, they're the if team. If everybody stays healthy, they got a chance. But you and I both know that. So even though the Jets look like they've improved on paper, have they really? We'll find out once the pads come on.
Yeah.
And then has, you know, and New England to me has, you know, made the improvements that they need. But New England's number one improvement is they've already made that with Jacoby Brissett. He's better than any quarterback they had last year. So that's going to help them. And then when you go down the road, they're going to have to draft one. So I think the pack is tighter. I don't know if there's one team distinguish itself here.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it there, especially with the guys that Buffalo has lost. And who knows? We discussed this last week. Stephon Diggs is available. If you want to go ahead and call, he's available. So if they were to ever trade Stephon Diggs, whatever the perk package that they would get back, maybe the Bills take an even further step back from what they were a year ago. All right, on the other side, Tim Murray of VEASAN Primetime joins us to break down today's slate in March Madness. We got the second round Sunday here on tap for you guys on the DraftKings Network.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sign up on a VSIN Pro annual subscription today and get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code Lombardi. You'll get VSIN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, including all the daily best bets, the betting splits, the betting systems, the premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus, most importantly, our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember, use promo code Lombardi. First year, only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network here on a Sunday. Second round of the NCAA tournament will tip off in about 2 hours, and to help us break down the NCAA tournament, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, it's our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern time here. Tim, thanks for waking up with us this morning. We were talking about this game yesterday, and I see it's on your best bet sheet here. James Madison against Duke over in Brooklyn. Right now, the Blue Devils down to 7-point favorites, total 148.5. What do you like in this game between the Dukes and the Duke Blue Devils?
Yeah, you could still find a 7.5 out there. I know, Femi, the seat that you're sitting in, that sports book still holds a 7.5. I'm fascinated by this matchup. You know, look, James Madison was a very, as you put up the air quotes, trendy dog in that opening round. And, you know, we talked about it yesterday, Femi. There was no flukiness about their victory over Wisconsin. They just look like the superior team throughout the evening there. And when I look at James Madison and why I believe and hope they will keep this close against Duke is just their defense. I mean, they are a tenacious defensive team, and they force you into a lot of turnovers. Now, on the flip side, why will Duke cover? They don't turn the ball over a ton. And Wisconsin, they didn't enter in that game. And ultimately, James Madison was able to turn them over 19 times, which is a season high for the Badgers. So I do think guard play for James Madison certainly is, I don't want to say better than Duke's guard play, because Duke has some, you know, quality guards and a veteran and Jeremy Roach. But I do think they're not going to be overpowered by the athleticism from the backcourt. I think the biggest concern for me and why I think Duke could win and cover this game and you know, have this be a losing bet would be Kyle Filipowski. Kyle Filipowski is a matchup nightmare. He's the 7 foot stretch four that Duke has. Really didn't have a typical Kyle Filipowski type of game in round one against Vermont. He only attempted one shot. I do have concerns about the size for the Dukes down low and guarding Filipowski. So that would be the biggest concern. You know, you look at the roster for James Madison, you know, no one over, you know, 6'8", 6'9", in their regular rotation. But I think James Madison is more than a formidable foe. And I think this is going to be quite the battle today in Brooklyn. Both of these teams, really good 3-point shooting teams. So, you know, who shows up? Look, we saw two teams yesterday. Creighton struggled for the most part from long range until they were able to hit some shots in the second overtime. And then Tennessee was able to prevail by the skin of their teeth against Texas, and they could not hit water if they fell out of a boat from long range. So, you know, that's the beauty of this tournament, right, guys, is the variance. And we've got two good 3-point shooting teams going head to head. And we'll see if one of them can get a little hotter than the other.
James Madison's the second best defensive team against the 3-point line, only allowing 28.8%. And when you break down their year, I mean, this team won over 30 games. They lose twice to Appalachian State, you know, and they've been on with the nation's longest winning streak with 14 games. And when I look at their team, Tim, the one thing I think that I kind of have to remind myself of is the maturity of these teams. I mean, they've got a lot of older players on their team that have kind of been, maybe they're not going to be pro players, but they're going to be really good players. Bickerstaff and Edwards are good collegiate players, the best in the conference. So I don't think they're going to get intimidated or feel like, uh-oh, there's the Duke Blue Devils in those uniforms.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think those are really good points that you make, Michael, because if you look at, you know, the combined experience that they have, as you alluded to, it's a veteran team. And, you know, what Coach Byington has done there has really been phenomenal. Look, a concern that I had and ultimately why I didn't get to the window in their first round matchup, outside the fact that it seemed like everybody out there liked James Madison to pull this upset or at least cover the spread, was I knew how quality they were on the court, but my concern was who had they beaten. As you alluded to, their two toughest conference games were against Appalachian State, and they lost both of them. But, you know, you throw that out the window now. And, you know, I think this is a team that you could argue was underseeded. You know, some people out there, bracketologists, believe that this was a James Madison team that really should have been probably on that 11 line, you know, more so than maybe an NC State or something like that. So or definitely a Duquesne. But here they are as a 12, and we will see if they can pull the upset, or for my case, just let's just keep it close. Let's have a competitive battle, and hopefully, you know, for all those dog backers out there, we're due, fellas, because yesterday was a rough one. If you like the dogs, as they went 1-6-1 against the spread.
Yeah, we'll try not to relive that Oregon Creighton double overtime from last night. Here we're hanging out with Tim Murray on the Progressive Guest Line, host of VSiN Primetime. Check it out weekdays 6 to 9 Eastern Time here on VSiN. Let's go over to Spokane here, Tim, where Grand Canyon's taking on Alabama. The Lopes, a big performance against St. Mary's Friday night. Their contingency is out there. They've taken over the Inland Northwest. Now they're catching 6 against the Crimson Tide, an up pace, up tempo kind of team. Total 169. What intrigues you with this matchup?
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday as well, laughing about Alabama and, you know, the Charleston game that Alabama had in the first round was kind of exactly of who they are and what they're capable of, as Alabama put up 109 points. But this is a team that in Alabama that is not very good defensively, right? 117th in defensive efficiency, and they can be had. You watch that Grand Canyon team, and you know, I watched a lot of WAC basketball this year, and they made a run to the conference championship. I was on the other side. I thought they would have a challenging foe there in the championship game in UT Arlington, and they were able to win that game and cover Grand Canyon was. You know, this is a team in Grand Canyon that is, once again, similar to James Madison and what Michael pointed out. Look, they're not going to be scared. This is another veteran type of team. Tyon Grant Foster, athletically, it looks like he belongs in a high major. And he started at a high major, started at Kansas, transferred to DePaul, had some health concerns. He's overcome those, which is great to see. And he gets out. And he can roll. I mean, this is a team that you know, has some shooters and McLaughlin as well in that backcourt. So, you know, this is going to be an up and down affair. You know, if you want to go in game, there's going to be, you know, a lot of swings and momentum in this game, no doubt. But I think what you pointed out, Femi, is also important to note, that this game being played in Spokane, the Grand Canyon faithful, man, they follow. It is impressive what that fan base does. And Grand Canyon, similar to what we saw from James Madison, if you remove the seeds on the bottom line there, it looked like this Grand Canyon team was the 5 seed and St. Mary's was the 12 seed. Very impressive performance in that opening round. And, you know, it's against Alabama. You kind of just got to buckle up and hope that, you know, Mark Sears isn't hitting everything under the sun. And, you know, he was unbelievable in that opening round game for Alabama, as he was, you know, able to finish with 30 points. So I think Grand Canyon has a chance to keep this competitive. So both 12s for me today, I think, no doubt can keep games competitive against their the fours in their region.
You know what, Texas A&M, big win against Nebraska, kind of have, I don't know if they've peaked, but they seem to have found their offense. I mean, when you look at them during the season, they were the 340th ranked effective field goal percentage team offensively. Ouch. But Radford and Manuel have really turned on their game. What's your handicap on this one against a very good Houston team, which played outstanding the other night?
Yeah, so, you know, we're looking at 9.5s out there. So a little bit of money coming in on the Aggies. Yeah, I mean, to your point about Texas A&M, they shot out of their minds in that opening round victory. And you know, look, when they're shooting, watch out. I mean, Nebraska fans are having nightmares right now because they were able to put up, you know, 98 points on them. Wade Taylor hit 7 threes in that opening round game. So, look, this is a team that, If they're shooting at the level that they were shooting, this is a very dangerous team. What intrigues me so much, guys, about this game is the fact that Texas A&M just kind of wants to bully you. They are an elite offensive rebounding team, and they almost just kind of throw it off the glass and just go get boards and get the second chance points. They didn't have to do that in the first round, right? Because they were burying three pointers all over the place. But you look at the Houston team on the flip side, best defense in the country, you know, but are they going to be able to keep Texas A&M off the glass? So I don't have a play on this one. I do think Houston personally was my champion. So I think they emerge out of this game. But I think this matchup is very intriguing to watch, just because stylistically, you've got a very tough nosed team in Houston facing a team in Texas A&M that just wants to bully you.
All right. He is Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime. Check it out.
Great
weekdays,
job, Tim.
6 to 9 Eastern Time, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Tim, good luck with the bets, man. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, let's get those dogs barking today.
We'll see if the dogs are barking. Yesterday, real chalky for the bets here in March Madness. All right, on the other side, let's turn our attention to the Pro Days NFL Draft QB Spotlight next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 that you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code TLL when you sign up and earn $500 in bonus bets for every $1,000 that you wager now. This is specifically catered to all of our VSiN listeners and viewers. Take advantage of it right now, as we got the March Madness going on here, the men's and women's tournaments here in the NCAA. All right, this is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out there in the great state of New Jersey. Thanks to Tim Murray, who joined us in the last segment, giving out some of his best bets for the day. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. But Michael, let's put the college hoops off to the side here momentarily and talk about some of the pro days that we will have coming up in the NFL. We saw Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy this past week at USC and Michigan, respectively. This upcoming week, though, big days for Jaden Daniels on the 27th, and then Drake May and Michael Penix on the 28th. So the pro day circuit is definitely in full gear here with all these quarterbacks. And before we get into these guys individually, can you just explain to some of our listeners and viewers, what is the importance of the pro days now in 2024, where it feels like there's so much of the access and so many of these visits for these guys to go to their teams?
Well, I mean, the workout's almost insignificant because they're so scripted, and it's controlled by the quarterback coach who coaches the quarterback, whether it's Jaden Daniels' quarterback coach. They always have somebody, and they work with it. It's kind of a rehearsal. It's not really a practice. You don't get to see them. But what you get to do is you get to spend time with the kid. Chicago spent 3 days out in USC. They went to dinner with Caleb Williams. They spent time talking to the coaches. It's kind of a get-together more than anything. Eventually, you're going to bring them back to your facility and kind of nail down some of that. But it's good to kind of watch them compete and see what they do in these surroundings that you're able to look at them. You know, Bo Nix, you know, we didn't even mention him. He had a pro day 2 weeks ago. I think Sean Payton and a lot of Denver people were there. I mean, I think nobody mentions his name in the conversation. J.J. McCarthy seems to be the guy everybody wants to talk about. But Bo Nix does some things that I think people are that run that West Coast system, that run the, you know, you've got to get your feet aligned. It's not a progressive read. Here's where we're going with the football system, like Kyle does and like Mike McDaniel does and all those guys. And certainly what Minnesota does and Sean Payton, you know, Nix is an appealing guy. And so I think the other thing, like for Jaden Daniels, Femi, it's going to be getting him on a scale. You know, he wouldn't get on a scale with the combine, right? So you're going to get him on a scale, see how much he weighs, make sure that scale's right, you know, because trust me, you could be wrong, right? You know, and so, you know, don't put it past anybody. I mean, the great Art Schleister, you know, this is years before you were born. There was a quarterback at Ohio State who got involved in gambling, actually, named Art Schleister. And he was the best quarterback in college football, you know, and this is when nobody was throwing the ball in college. And he had a workout, like, and people went to it. But what they found was he brought his own footballs to the workout. And he threw the ball really well in the workout. When he got to the NFL with new balls, the K balls, he couldn't throw the ball worth a darn. And he became a blown pick just on sheer talent alone. And so some of these workouts can be really misleading. Like when I went up to work out Jake Locker, I mean, you know, that was precision. He was perfect. And I left there saying, I know, you know, Jake Locker's a really good athlete. I don't know if he's a really good quarterback. You know, I think, you know, sometimes guys continue to play quarterback because, you know, they're the best athlete on the team when maybe they're not the best quarterback. So you kind of get a chance to see their competitive drive and if they have that ability to take the team to the next level.
Yeah, Jake Locker. Shout out to Ferndale, Washington. Jake Locker there was a Washington Husky. Was a hell of an athlete there at the University of Washington. But like you said, didn't quite pan out in terms of crap.
I wrote in my report on him. I wrote on my report on him. I can remember writing it that he was one of those kids that they kept playing at shortstop because he was the best player, but he really should have been a second baseman. And I think that's really sums up who he was as a quarterback. Great athlete, not a great quarterback.
I'm looking at Art Schleicher's Wikipedia page. Fourth overall pick in 1982. Played for the Baltimore and Indianapolis Colts from 82 to 85, then with the Bills, then had a cup of coffee in Canada with the Ottawa Rough Riders there. So it definitely it pans out what you said. He was the AFL MVP, though, in 1990. So Arch Leister had that going for him with his career a little bit later on the back end. But I do find these pro days very fascinating because from the draft betting standpoint, the bettors are always looking for, like, all right, can I find some sort of nugget here? Can I find something in the tea leaves? And how could we forget what happened last year at C.J. Stroud's pro day? Remember when we were talking about that? The Zapruder film of what, did Josh McCown and Frank Reich say that we'll see you in Charlotte or we're going to play hoops in Charlotte? Like, that whole thing. And it moved the market to where all of a sudden Stroud was like minus 800 to be the first overall pick in that range. And then it ends up being Bryce Young. Are these pro days? Because you mentioned how Denver had a big contingency in Eugene for the Bo Nix pro day at Oregon. Is there more noise or is there actual signal that we can take away from these pro days based on who is in person to view these guys working out and throwing the football?
Well, I mean, it is a secret endeavor, right? So it is noise the more than it is something you could take. For example, there's going to be a linkage between Drake May, who was coached by Josh McCown in high school, and Minnesota's interest. That line is going to be drawn perfectly. Now, whether it's true or not remains to be seen. Drake May is an incredible kid. J.J. McCarthy, incredible kid. Michael Penix, incredible kid. You know, and their off-the-field habits and behavior are what you want. Same thing with Bo Nix. What you want for a quarterback to come in and be the face of your franchise. So what often happens is sometimes that off the field kind of tilts you into thinking you could become a really good player. We can fix your mistakes. It happened with EJ Manuel. It happened with Jake Locker. You take this kid, he's a really good kid. We'll fix him. And instead of wondering whether you could fix him or not, ask how are you going to fix him? Like, how can we fix this player, right? I mean, Drake May now is 6'4". He's 240. He's got a little bit of Josh Allen's size to him. Not quite as big, but this is a big kid who's a young kid, right? So you got to project him forward. You got to project him to where is he going to be 2 years from now? What's his body going to look like if he doesn't go on the Joel Embiid program, which is to do nothing? If he does something, you know, what's he going to look like, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to know this is going to be – so you got to project it forward. Same thing with Jaden Daniels. Can he get to 210? He's listed at 210, but he doesn't look like he's 210, and you worry about his durability. Now, he makes some incredible plays, but again, I mean, he's got two pro receivers on his team. I mean, he has two pro receivers on his team, and nobody's mentioned that, right? I mean, and I'm not saying as a negative toward Daniels because he makes them go, but, yeah, he's gotten a lot of help there.
Yeah, LSU always talented. Not quite the Burrow throwing to Jefferson and Chase, but Neighbors and Thomas, those guys are legitimate wide receivers, especially Neighbors has been discussed as maybe a potential wide receiver one ahead
Thomas
of Marvin
too,
Harrison
though,
Jr.
Femi.
Yeah.
Thomas too. He's, you know, when we draft these 26 receivers that are going to go in the first round, I mean, just look at any mock. They're all going to go in the first round. I mean, you know, this is going to be, you know, he's going to be as high as anybody. And one thing about taking a receiver from the Southeast Conference is you get a chance, they play some press, right? Mm-hmm. You get a chance to see Keon Coleman. You know, I know he plays at Florida State, but you get to see him in press coverage. You get to see Brian Thomas in press coverage. Sometimes these conferences, if you don't get to see that, you wonder whether the guy has acceleration and the ability to change direction at the top of the route.
So at this point in the draft process, it feels like the draft begins at pick number two because the betting market is telling you that it's going to be Caleb Williams to the Chicago Bears. If you just watched and saw the photos and the videos of the pro day, it seems like it's Caleb Williams to the Chicago Bears with the whole Bears contingency meeting with their family and all that stuff. It's a formality at this point. He's going to be the Bears quarterback in 2024. But Dan Quinn was asked about if they had been receiving calls for that second overall pick. Here's what he told Tom Pelissero over at the NFL Network. He said, quote, "Yes, I would say that the phone is ringing and because, like you said, of the talent of the group this year, meaning the quarterbacks. And so I would anticipate him fielding these calls as it goes through. And usually it's not necessarily later than number six or seven, but those people who are usually in the top four or five, there's somebody that somebody has targeted. And I think it's most likely, well, I've got to take a shot. A lot of times it's no, like, thanks for calling, but it is part of the process. And you have to do your due diligence to listen and to find out just to make sure, like, is there something that you just couldn't refuse? So that doesn't sound like the pick is for sale, but it sounds like some people are calling up. Are they calling up for Jaden Daniels? Are they calling up for Drake May? I guess that's what we have to figure out over these next few weeks here.
Well, I don't think there's a consensus, right? I don't think there's a complete consensus of it. I think every team's going to view it differently based on their offense, based on how they function within the offensive framework. So I don't think you can draw any straight lines there. You know, obviously on paper, on just on production, Daniels is the better player. There's no question. You know, you can watch all the things he does. He makes plays with his feet. So, but look, this is, we still have a long way to go, and there's still a lot of lying. The Giants just announced they're not, you know, Daniel Jones is their starter. Shocking that they would come back and why are they spending all this time on quarterbacks if he's their starter? Well, in case he gets hurt, right? I got it.
That makes you wonder, doesn't it?
I'm buying it. Lion season, Femi. Lion season.
Head on a swivel out of here. That is it for hour number one. Hour number two, we'll get back to the college hoops here on the Lombardi Line.